U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Thanks, Dave Schwann, for those midday numbers. We'll keep track of those throughout the show today. I know yesterday at some point we were down 600 or 700 points, but rallied near the close to only down 79. So we'll cross our fingers and hope that's the case as we move through the afternoon as well. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, of course, Chicago's bank on 720 WGN. And we'll jump right into things with Andrea Haines, editor of Blue Sky Innovation. Happy Friday, Andrea. How you doing?
Thanks, John. Good to see you. Great.
Good to see you, too. And let's jump right in with talking about Apple. They've had a rough go of it since October. I read that they've lost, 20% of their value in just a couple months, right?
Yeah, the new phones are not selling as, you know, as fast as they had hoped. So, you know, if you're Apple, you have to be super elite and cool. You can't have, like, you know, a tacky-looking special. So what do? They offer extra money on your trade-ins.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about that. They're actually reaching out to customers. And not only that, but when people go to Apple stores, they're training their employees to remind folks, hey, this is an option for you. Because a lot of people, you know, used to not get anything for your Apple. So people would just hold on to them or discard them. But now they're really trying to push that.
Yeah, and this story spoke to me because I'm a total fence sitter on the new phone. I'm at that two-year mark where I'm starting to decide, and it's really targeted at people just like me who have two, maybe three-year-old phones. So that series of phones, you're getting more money back than you used to.
Mm-hmm.
The 7 Plus, you're now getting $300 back, so you might see the figure $449 for one of the new phones, which is a lot more palatable than, you know, a lot of the coverage around the time they came out. The other model is $1,000.
For folks that haven't bought a new phone in a while, a lot of times you used to get a really good deal when you'd re-sign your contract, and that was sort of built in, and then you'd wait to hold your phone as long as you could to get the new contract. Now, I had sticker shock when I bought my Apple 8, I believe it is, the last time I saw it, because then I had to pay it on my bill in monthly installments instead of getting any sort of discount on it. I wonder if that's contributed, too, that the overall price of these things, you can't quite hide it like you used to in contracts.
Absolutely. It used to be that you didn't feel any cost, really. If you waited 2 years, you felt almost no cost when you upgraded. And now you do see that sticker price, or like you said, they're pushing people into these monthly payment deals, or you wind up paying $25 a month or something like that. So, you know, as the phones get to that $1,000 price point, they have had to find different ways to get them in our pockets.
Are they going
to
lower prices? I know maybe a couple phones they've been dropping the prices pretty significantly.
Yeah, there's talk of that, and talk of, you know, maybe coming out with a version that's lower cost, which they've done on certain lines in years past when they've had to. But it was interesting because this, they had a source saying this was like a fire drill for them, because the phone is, you know, it's probably the most innovative product of our lifetimes in many ways.
Yes.
The most, you know, for consumer products. And, you know, they really count on the revenue from those phones.
I mean, how are they ever, can anyone ever replicate the success of the iPhone alone? I mean, you're talking hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue every single year just from the one gadget.
Went from that thing that we weren't sure we needed to now, you know, everybody has them and has to have at least a somewhat new one to keep up.
And yeah, it's going to be hard to replicate that. So let's move on to the next story, talking about finances a little bit less than an Apple iPhone would be tipping with your baristas. You know what it used to be before the age of, you know, paying, you know, swiping your credit card on some of the new devices that they have, was they had a change jar out, and maybe you'd give your change. If you're paying with cash, $3, okay, the cup of coffee's $2.35, I'll throw my change in there now. Everything's obviously changed not only with credit cards, but with these new point of sale devices where you sign your name right there, and then they give you tipping options. That's causing some problems for people at the counter, right?
Yeah, so it's super awkward as a customer, right? It's like now you have an iPad or similar device where you're, you know, it shifts toward you. The barista's looking at you over the counter, and you have to choose a tip amount basically right in front of them. And it gives you some different options. Like you said, it used to be you'd leave them the change or a dollar plus the change or whatever was somewhat easy, or just the dollar when you had cash in your hand. And now it's 15%, 18%. The one I go to has little codes on it where it's like 15% means good, 18% means great. Like, and you're like, wow, this is psyching me out here.
Yes, and the person's just kind of standing right there. And that leaves into question that, you know, like when you go to a bar and there's certain drinks that take a lot of effort to make, there's some where they just, you know, pour you the beer. It's similar in coffee. If someone's making you a cappuccino, a lot of effort goes into that. Sometimes the black coffee is just a quick, easy pour. And then you look at that machine and there is an other option or something, but man, you're right there staring at them.
Yeah, and then are you going to do the math yourself and try to figure out 20% of a brewed coffee tap? Like, I want a heart on my latte if I'm going to go to 20%. But I do feel like, you know, I think there's something to be said for, you know, as the kicker of the story from business was, like, if you can't afford a tip, you can't afford the item. I think that's a good way of thinking about it because, you know, we do kind of have to pay for the service. But it's interesting how technology has, in a way, made it easier, but then it brings about all these other issues that we have to think about.
It's interesting because in the short term, you might think, well, that's great for baristas. And it is. They might get a little extra money out of it, whether it's because of implicit guilt or it's just easier to click that button that's right there and they get a little bit extra each time. But I imagine experts warn that over time, as you start to look at your choices, you know, you start looking at that coffee bill, an extra dollar each time you go two or three times a day, let's say, starts to add up. You might kind of look at your choices and neglect the coffee store altogether.
Yeah, you don't want to push people too far, right? It's like what becomes maybe a splurge or a treat. It, you know, if you start tacking on too many costs, people may rethink it altogether.
Mm-hmm. Robot janitors coming Walmart.
Yeah. They're coming.
Obviously, McDonald's has been, chided in some directions, heralded in others for having the kiosks that are pay-as-you-order. But these are janitors that are going to be in robot form. And not only overnight, like while customers are there too. So we get to see these things.
Yeah. So Walmart's going to have these. They've got 360 of these rolling out in stores by the end of January. And these will be cleaning the floors. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to keep an eye here on the show and like how, you know, our robot's taking our jobs. So we like to keep an eye on when they're coming around. And so this is kind of interesting. You know, like you said, there's other things happening in stores. So I think we're going to be getting more and more used to that, be it at checkout or be it the robot rolling by us to clean the floor.
Right. And I think it's interesting in this market where there are, you know, fewer and fewer jobs available there's more jobs available because the unemployment number is so low that there's not as much uproar over some of these decisions to be made as there might have been a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's very true. And these are already in use in Seattle, San Diego, Boston, and Miami at airports. And the story says they look like a cross between a miniature Zamboni and a motorized wheelchair.
All right, there we go. Look forward to seeing those in the Walmart soon. Okay, we'll wrap things up with a little fun. T-Box is this weekend. For those that don't know, remind folks what that is.
Yeah, so T-Box is originally a bar crawl that was the 12 Bars of Christmas. It is in Lakeview, and it has become this massive event over the course of, this is the 23rd one. It started in 1996. So the Red Eye cover story this week is taking a look at the history and how did it grow to this, and it grew really big, and now it's gone down a little bit and settled at around 15,000 attendees.
Settled at 15,000.
Settled is maybe not the right word for anything relating to T-Box.
Drinking from about 8 or 9 in the morning through 8 p.m. I actually got a chance to interview those folks for WCIU. Chris Festa, the one who started it, started with a couple guys, and as you mentioned. The nice thing is, and look, there's a lot of people that say it's debaucherous, fun, and crazy, or a little too wild. They do have a charity aspect to it. They've given about over $250,000 over those years to local charities, so that's good. But if you're in Lakeview, you'll see them, right?
And if you're on Twitter, like I was saying, I like to follow it by watching the scanner reports, the police scanners. It's a little bit of a gentle, you know, it can be a little bit of a hate watch in the hate click sense in the nicest possible way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Andrea, where can people find out more about these stories?
So ChicagoTribune.com, RedEyeChicago.com.
Thanks for your time, okay? 720 WGN, John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Before we get to our next guest, a couple texts on the text line, 312-981-7200. Give me a break. Tip a barista. They have a nicer job than fast food workers. They get paid more. We don't tip fast food workers, do we? And then another text from 847. Wait a minute. Do we tip at McDonald's? Why do we feel like we have to tip at Starbucks? I always just thought that tipping a barista was part of the normal culture of things. But it is interesting. We don't tip fast food workers, but we tip baristas. Sometimes they're similar work environments, I guess you could say. So 312-981-7200. I want to know from folks if they tip their baristas. Someone that always tips their barista, I know, is Jessica Schaefer. She's the senior director at LaSalle Network. Jessica, you always tip the barista, right?
Good morning. Of course I do.
Exactly. There you go. Not to put you on the spot or anything. But Jessica, we're going to be talking about, you know, hiring millennial talent, keeping millennial talent. And you're obviously the senior director at LaSalle Network. So I think the reason why this is so important is that millennials, and I'm kind of, I guess, technically one of them. I'm a grandpa millennial, some people say. Barely on the end there. And, you know, everyone loves to make them the punching bag. But the reality is they represent a giant part of our workforce, and their desires, needs, and values are different than other generations, right?
That's exactly right. Pew Research estimates that the millennial generation will take up 66 million jobs at their peak. And millennials are born in 1980 all the way through 1996, 1997. There's a couple different, you know, there's a debate out there between
right.
what's the actual cutoff. So millennials could be in their late to early 40s.
That's incredible. And
late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah. One thing that I found really interesting, there are some changes, because I remember, you know, a couple years ago we were talking, it was all values-oriented. Millennials really wanted companies that gave back. One interesting thing, I imagine philanthropy is still important, but it is losing steam and to what's important to millennials, but gaining steam, and still the number one thing is compensation. So in many ways, millennials, as they get older, that might be changing ever so slightly.
Definitely. So what's interesting is we do a study every year, and we survey folks that are coming right out of school. And last year and 2 years ago, one of the top factors for millennials that were graduating was philanthropy. And they wanted to work for a company that either had a mission or a vision that was dedicated to giving back, or that had a company that had a volunteer time off program or some way that they were able to give back, whether it's time or monetary donations. And this year what we found was that philanthropy was among the bottom three factors for millennials when evaluating a job offer in a company.
Is it just because as we get older, we get less idealistic? Is there something else? Or is it just that, hey, as people get older, maybe they're having kids or starting to buy those homes that they have delayed for so long? They need the money.
Yeah. I mean, compensation is always going to be one of those top three factors. You know, we always talk about location, work-life balance, and compensation. Those are all very important to people, and sometimes those factors shift in the order that they are. But I also think what we saw from our survey, we surveyed about 5,000 folks across the country, and what we found is they also want a career path, and they want to be invested in, and they want training and development, which I think will lend itself to earning more.
Yeah, you mentioned that training, development, and wanting a career path that goes right in line with your study and the look at that the longer people are in their careers, and I guess this isn't an entire surprise, they are less happy in their career, they're less happy, or they mm-hmm. think they're being challenged less. So what is it about, how can you keep millennials around happy? Because that's obviously the best investment you can make in a company, is keeping your workers there.
Definitely. I mean, if you look at things like flexibility, we're moving away from those perks, having beer in the office and kegs and ping pong tables. People want to be able to work when they can work and on a schedule that's right for them. They don't necessarily want to always come into the office. They don't always necessarily want to work a typical 8 to 5. They want to be able and held accountable to getting their work done, but they want to be responsible for how they achieve that. And then again, they want to be reinvested in. They want that training and development, and that's how you continue to stimulate an employee who's maybe been with your company for a while or they've been in the workforce for a while. That's how you get those engagement numbers back up. You talk about what do you want out of your career? What does work-life balance look like to you? What does flexibility look like to you? Let's talk about it because it's different for everyone.
The market's been scary this week and unemployment numbers came a shade under expectations, still gaining 155,000 mm-hmm. jobs in November. But at the end of the day, unemployment is still at historic lows. So look, if you're trying to hire millennials in your workforce, they're going to be getting multiple offers. Companies need to be prepared for that.
Yes, definitely. What we saw from our survey is that most folks, on average, were getting 2 to 3 job offers in 2018. And so I expect that to increase in 2019. So the big thing here is you got to move fast in your hiring process. Shorten and condense the interview process if possible, and then move quickly on people that you like, because otherwise you're going to miss out on those really strong candidates.
There's two words that I usually associate with sports teams or sports options. Signing bonus. I never heard of one of those anywhere I worked, but more companies are considering those because, hey, you give a little cash up front, that could make the difference.
Definitely. It can sweeten the pot because maybe you can't compete compensation-wise, or maybe you're not able to offer as much flexibility as another company. But quite frankly, maybe they want a little cash in their pocket before they start their job because they have some upcoming travel or they're looking at buying a house or a condo. That signing bonus, if you will sweeten the deal a little bit.
I should ask for one of those. Jessica Schaefer, the Senior Director at LaSalle Network, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dave. 720 WGN. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this mostly sunny but cold Friday afternoon. People are yelling at me on the text line. I can tell because of all caps that they're texting in. Apparently upset that I tip my barista. I think most of us do, but maybe I'm wrong. 312-981-7200. Why tip a barista? Lots of question marks and exclamation points. Really, they make decent hourly wages, plus some places have benefits. Cool. I can still tip them, though. Give them a little more. Someone asks, what's next? Am I going to be tipping plumbers? I don't know. Maybe. That sounds good. They're going to fix my pipes. I might as well get a couple extra bucks for it. How about tipping your Uber drivers or your Lyft drivers? I do. I add an extra buck on. I'm not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination at all, but give an extra dollar. But guess what? If you don't want to, you don't have to. And what you don't have to do is yell at me. But I know another person that tips their baristas. It's Kaylee Moore, finance and e-commerce writer, featured in Entrepreneur, Inc. magazine, and others. Kaylee, thank you so much for joining us here on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
So do you tip your barista? I don't mean to put you on the spot here, Kaylee.
I do. I was a barista, so I'm very much on board with that.
And there we go. See, I didn't think it was that controversial, but people on the text line are letting me know otherwise. But hey, go do what you want. So we're talking about retail to e-tail, which I really like the headline and the article that you wrote, Kaylee. First and foremost, your article where you talk about forming a website for your brick and mortar, is it the same as anyone that's maybe just launching on their own without a brick and mortar? Or are you really focusing on businesses here that have established themselves in a neighborhood or have a certain customer in mind, and now they need to expand that to an online division?
You know, when I wrote this piece for BigCommerce, it was very much aimed at the people who had a brick-and-mortar store. But I will say that I think that a lot of the tips within this piece are pretty much applicable across the board to anybody considering creating a website for their online or for their store if they're wanting to have an online presence for the first time.
You know, it's interesting because I work in media. I work at a TV station here in town as well and a couple other places. And I was like, I need a website for myself. And it was just, I had no idea where to begin. I've seen advertisements for Squarespace and other sorts of ones, but maybe deciding that domain is not the first thing you should be doing. I guess you should probably be asking some other questions about your business and yourself and what you want out of it first, right?
Absolutely. And I think that that's a great point. I think it's very confusing because there are so many resources out there. There's so many tools, there's so much software, and everybody's telling you that they're the best. So where do you start when you're wanting to form an e-commerce store and have an online presence? And I think there is a lot of pre-launch prep that goes into the whole planning for making sure that you're doing everything right, that you have all of your ducks in a row, that you are making the right investments and spending your time in the right places. So, there's definitely some groundwork to do first.
And imagine it's identifying, and maybe it's because of the people you know that are coming in the brick and mortar, but I guess it's like, who are your customers and how are they going to use that website once you get it up?
Yes, that is definitely the number one thing, is who are you trying to attract to this website, and what is the purpose of the website, too? So finding who your primary customers are, that's definitely point number one. Typically, it is the people who are already coming into your store. Like you said, it's the people who already know you and like you. Maybe they're just looking for different options, or they're traveling and they want to order while they're away. I think that just being searchable online and having a place where you can point customers to after your business hours is a really smart thing to do.
And you mentioned being searchable. So you mentioned in this article SEO. For those that don't know, you want to choose a name that is searchable. And that's, what does SEO stand for?
So it's search engine optimization. And essentially, it's just how people are able to find you within Google search results or whatever search engine it is that they use.
And is that, I mean, I imagine that's important not only for people that are just searching the internet in general. They might stumble upon you if you have a good SEO domain name, but also for your customers if they didn't take the card on the way out or they don't have that name. You want it to be as easy as possible because if they can't find you with a Google search, that might be the end of their experience.
That's very true. And I know that there's research that says that 75% of shoppers will research online first. So if they're not able to discover you online, you're missing a huge opportunity there. You're missing some foot traffic for your store, too. So I think it's so important to have an online presence. E-commerce is still a pretty small portion of the online, of the retail, you know, for the holiday sales at year end. But I do know that 54% of millennials made purchases online last year during Black Friday weekend, and it was a $5 billion weekend last year. So I think it's silly if you don't have an opportunity to connect with the people who are so clearly ready to spend their money there.
Yeah, you really make a great point because I think a lot of you know the big box places have got really slick websites. I think a lot of people are small business minded. They want to shop at their local business, but especially here in Chicago, it's darn cold out. I know some great spaces in Lincoln Square, other neighborhoods where I know there's a little shop, but I'm like, I bet they don't have an online portal for me to buy anything, and I don't have time to go there. So it's really widening your opportunity to kind of compete, not necessarily in the total volume with the big boxes, but at least in the apparatus and the mode in which you use the big boxes.
Absolutely. And like I said, there are so many people who are in the research phase in the beginning. you want to be part of the consideration as customers are looking for their different options with different price points. And a lot of people are very much into the idea of supporting small businesses and supporting local online or local retail store owners. So it's important to have a place where they can find you online first, do that research, do their homework, and then take the time to come in and purchase in store if that's what they're wanting to do.
I imagine that a couple of weeks ago we had people give shout-outs to small businesses. A lot of them were places with a lot of different sorts of inventories, a lot of different sort of items for sale. I imagine just to kind of streamline things, you got to kind of select what you want to put online. Like, what are you selling?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's always smart to really prioritize products that you list in your online store with what are the things that you sell the most of, or what are the things that you get the most special requests for. Those are obviously the best sellers and the things that people are going to be searching out most. You know that they're the most loved by the customers that you already have. So even if you're just starting with a small group of 10 to 25 products out of the hundreds that you sell, that's a great starting point, and that's going to open some doors to get some first-time customers that maybe have never purchased from you before. And it's also going to help the people who are big fans of your brand already buy the things that they love from you just with a little bit more convenience factor.
Kaylee has more in the article at BigCommerce.com. We can't get to all the points, Kaylee, but the last one I want to wrap up of is a sub-point you mentioned. I think it's so important, and this is for people that are even selling their... I've noticed this when people sell their own stuff on the internet, whatever it is. Man, if you can make an investment in a good photographer or be one yourself, that makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. And if you're not somebody who feels comfortable doing that yourself, there are so many local options where you could reach out to a photographer, or if you have the time, you could teach yourself. There are so many free online resources where you can learn about these things maybe on a weeknight or on a weekend and really fairly easily and cheaply DIY your photos to where you have just really eye-catching and appealing product photos that, one, help you sell more products, and two, help you attract new fans who are just kind of drawn to the aesthetics of your brand.
Yeah, you know, if anyone can ever have the time or energy or a couple hundred bucks to take a photo class, that's going to help you out a lot in life, whether you're in the business world or not. Kaylee, we don't have enough time to get to everything. People can read more at BigCommerce.com, right?
Correct. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kaylee. Really appreciate it. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then afterwards, we're going to talk with Front Row Phyllis. Excited to find out what's coming up all around Chicago. Quick break here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you're in or around the Will County area, chances are you've heard about the Caterpillar job cuts that were announced a few years ago. Well, it's time for the rubber to meet the road. So starting next month, Caterpillar will lay off 285 workers. The company is planning on moving their regional factory to Mexico, despite reporting a $1.72 billion profit in the third quarter this year. Believe it or not, back in the 70s, Caterpillar employed about 7,000 workers in that area. Now they're down to about 700. But that's downer news, all that negative stuff. So let's focus on some positive stuff. Good news. Let's look for some good news. Aha! There you are. Deerfield-based Walgreens is building up their home delivery service of prescriptions. They've teamed up with FedEx to offer next-day delivery for just $5, and in some cities, same-day delivery. This was built off of the partnership that started last year. But you know, as consumers, we can just be so impatient sometimes. I guess this is what they've learned about the market demand. And if everything goes well, good news for everybody. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
720 WGN 815 text. Do you tip the person that takes your order at McDonald's or the cashier at the grocery store? They're doing their job too. That's a good point. I don't, because there's no way to do it. But I always give a dollar to the charity at the end of the thing at the grocery store. If they had an option to tip the cashier or maybe the bagger, I would do that for sure. They should look into that. Let's talk more about fun things with Front Row Phyllis. Phyllis, I bet you're a great tipper, aren't you?
I am a great tipper, and I think you are too.
I've certainly sold myself as that. Maybe the baristas in my neighborhood are shaking their heads. But Front Row Phyllis, so great to talk with you on a Friday, and let's jump right into the great things that are happening around Chicago. And I prefer that my plays go right, but the play that goes wrong at the Oriental, which is soon to be renamed their theater, now through December 16th. Talk about that show.
Yeah, so we were there at opening night. It opened a couple nights ago, and it runs through December 16th. And I have to be honest with you, it is the funniest play you will ever see.
Really?
Just imagine, just imagine there wasn't anybody that wasn't laughing the entire time. I mean, from the beginning to the end. And just imagine Monty Python and Sherlock Holmes getting together and putting a play together. And that's what this is. And it's got a great story, too. So it's got a classic murder mystery. filled with everything from mishaps to mania and, you know, actors tripping over everything from themselves to their lines. It's really very, very entertaining. So like I said, it runs now through December 16th at the Oriental.
You got a little more time through January 20th at the Lyric Opera. Talk about this. This is a version of Cinderella in opera form.
It is. It's called Cendrillion, and it is, of course, everyone's favorite fairy tale. And it's blissful and enchanting, along with some wit and elegance, and then throw in the hysterically funny stepmother. So it's definitely one that you want to see. Runs now through January 20th over at the Lyric Opera.
Billy Joel sings Piano Man, but how about two of them, Piano Guys, at the Chicago Theater? That's tomorrow night. What's that all about?
So these guys have truly made a name for themselves. They have over a billion followings, and they do everything from piano to cello. And, I mean, their show is amazing. So you definitely want to check it out over at the Chicago Theater.
And next weekend, we just got a little time left. Two big stars, one at the Lyric Opera, one at Allstate next weekend.
Yeah, so Lyric Opera is John Legend is going to be here on his legendary Christmas tour. And he actually just released his debut holiday album. And it's filled with everything from, you know, new and classic carols. And don't be surprised if you get a glimpse of his wife, the incredibly talented Chrissy Teigen, who I love.
That's right, for sure. And that's next Thursday, right? And then Friday's Bob Seger.
Bob Seger, you know, he was supposed to be here last year. He was ill for a little bit. Now he's back on the road. This is actually his final tour in celebration of, you know, 50 years of doing this. And, of course, we recognize that classic, you know, raspy shouting voice.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll have it with him along with the Silver Bullet Band. And that is at the Allstate Arena on December 14th.
I'm an entertainment guru, Front Row Phyllis. Thanks for joining us. Sorry we had to plow through those. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you. You too.